I would have thought, if anything,
you can test the outcome of a medical investigation. Did you cut the foot off? Well, is it off for starters? Let's start there, okay?
Mark, hi, good morning.
Good morning to you. You won't guess where I am. I'm in Mpumalanga overlooking the Crocodile River, and I can actually see a crocodile in the river. So eat your heart out, guys. It's a lovely summer's already come here into this part of the world. And we're here, and how are you? And what's news, man? What's news? What's happening?
Well, there's you know, a lot happening and not a lot. You know what I mean? It's a strange impasse kind of world, I would say, at the moment.
Yeah.
Things are going on, but also, you know, it doesn't have the power of global news that we're used to. But, you know, one thing that has happened is that we've got numbers.
Yeah.
Are you in favor of numbers or against numbers?
I'm numbers before anything else, Tim. I am. My middle name is Numbers. Okay. I love numbers. Yeah. Okay. Well, what numbers have you got, man? What's happened?
Yeah. One of the things that I don't know, I think is important is that we have problems, it seems, very big problems with South Africa's census. And I just wanted to highlight the fact that there is a big issue going on here. I don't want to go into all of the details. You can read about it. But I mean, one of the interesting things is that apparently, according to the census, Johannesburg has grown by 8% over a decade. So, you know, less than a percentage point over a year.
It's not much.
It's not much here. Yeah. And Cape Town has grown by over 30% over that same decade. So now, technically speaking, Cape Town is South Africa's biggest city, which is by now, if the growth rates have continued from the census point onwards.
I'd be surprised if in absolute terms it's the biggest city. I'm not surprised by the trend or the growth rate. So I would go along with, Cape Town's growing, resident population is growing at three times that of Joburg, and because of semigration and because it's just, you know, it's got its act together, it seems to me, more than we have by quite a stretch. But this is what I don't understand, because I also read about it. There's an apparently like a 30% understatement, a 30% error. What I want to know is, how do you know that? Okay, because if your census is wrong, then how do you know what's right? Okay, so how did that happen?
Well, after you do the census, you do a more intense survey of a smaller area, and then you sort of compare the results. But of course, the smaller survey that you did could also be wrong.
So what I'm really saying is, I mean, each case involves extrapolation. It seems to me that the secondary checkup, census involves more extrapolation than the first, and that's being taken as fact, and the other one as fiction. So a bit confusing. But I'll tell you what, census data are very important inputs to any number of economic and demographic thinking and strategy and planning. Eh? And so if we get it wrong.
I mean, this is all crucial. This is why I was started off with a stupid question about numbers. You know what it suggests? I mean, there's a lot of things that it suggests. The one is that it's amazing how the perception of more opportunity and higher growth is such a magnet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is just, you can sort of see it over the world. People, you know, vote with their feet often. You know, even if the number for Johannesburg's growth is understated, it doesn't surprise me in the least that people from all over South Africa are kind of sliding towards Cape Town. It just makes a difference.
Well, people follow successful currents. They want to be in the in place, not the out place. Eh? I mean, it's just natural human behavior. And then it sort of usually solves itself because the pendulum starts swinging when the popular place becomes overcrowded and that infrastructure starts creaking and so on and so on and so on. You know? And so you'd expect it to self-correct unless there's something systemically causing it. And I might argue that in the case of a Joburg-Cape Town comparison, there is a systemic difference, and that is the extent to which the Johannesburg inner city is falling to pieces and more. And on Friday, it'll be a year since we had that terrible fire, the Isidizo fire, where there were 76 deaths. And I read this morning somewhere that 17 of those bodies, Tim, have still not been claimed, okay, which points you to another kind of discussion about who's living in Joburg. That's one thing. And that there are another four deaths. And then the last sort of trend that it sort of sparked in me is things don't get fixed when they broke. And why is that? I mean, Parliament's roof still hasn't been repaired. I don't know how many years it is since that. What is it? Because it seems that we're prepared to spend billions on things that aren't real, but we can't get to act together to fix things that are broke. Is there just not that much money in them or something? Help me with that, Tim.
No. I mean, I'm obviously equally astounded by this. I mean, if, you know, 76 people dying in a fire doesn't motivate you to get some urgency in your life,
yeah,
what will? It's incredible. I mean, it is difficult. It's very central Joburg. It's not an easy fix, right? But you know what I read recently is that the Joburg Library closed during COVID. You know, it's a very big, august library.
No, it hasn't opened.
Still hasn't opened. You know, 2 years after COVID ended.
It's a curious thing. And I think one of the causes of these centers of decay are that there isn't someone in charge, unilaterally in charge. There isn't. We have parallel hierarchies, okay? And we have the city management, if you like, and then we have the construction mafia, and then we have the, you know, I mean, I read somewhere that they saw heavily armed, what do they call them? You know, militarily armed people leaving one of those buildings with sort of artillery weapons. I mean, that might be bullshit, but there are forces at play in Johannesburg, inner city, it seems to me, that no one would dare, you know, no one would dare to tread there. And so you've almost got a blockade that you have to go in and sort out. You know, otherwise the whole thing just is isolated from governance and improvement. And that's going to take some leadership, the evidence of which is pretty sparse at the moment. Anyway,
I mean, the basic problem is there's a lack of accountability. There seems to be no link between the actual performance of the city. Well, maybe there is. You know, maybe we're just thinking about it in a too short term away. Because as you say, things iterate. Job, Cape Town's doing well at the moment, and you know, people are moving to Cape Town. No question. Yeah. But eventually, Joburg will have to wake up to the fact that it's got to get its act together. Because, you know, one of the consequences of this survey issue is that, you know, technically speaking, Joburg's grants from central government have been 20% too high for a decade.
And you see,
that's going to make a difference. I mean, you know, it's hard.
I despair at the lack, you started with numbers this morning. I despair at the lack of understanding of numbers. That, you know, I mean, you pause to think about Joburg and you come up with a business, if you like, was beyond any other facets of a city, a business, which is, you know, a top 40 company, as we said last week, on the JSE's equivalent. It's got an 85 billion rand budget every year. And you know, how do the capital allocation debates go? How do the priority lists of revenue determination and extraction and fairness and differences and things, how do all of these things go? If the route to power is only popularity, okay, and political allegiance, and we have to cross a bridge where political allegiance and power then steps back and appoints competence and purpose in its wake, you know. And so that, I think, is the biggest challenge. And there's only one way to solve it, Tim, in my view, and that's on the ground vested interest. So if you take the inner city as a for example, and you start moving towards, you know, mixed-use development where people are actually living there, working there, going to coffee shops there, walking in the streets there in some organized fashion that is litter-free, you start getting people looking after their own place. And that's the only way to solve it. I mean, it's part of a spatial, you know, problem that we've had forever, and we've got to reverse the spatial division and bring the people who are earning the money into the center of the city. That's what I would like to see starting to happen, because in the result of a decaying city, it actually doesn't get any revenue. People aren't paying for services, even the ones that get them. And eventually then you just become a slum, and then there's absolutely no oversight or order. Anyway, I'm going on a bit. I love Joburg. I live there. I'd be so keen to see that place stand up, lift itself up by its bootstraps, but you're going to have some powerful leadership. and some informed decision makers across any number of metrics. Enough of that.
All right. Can we talk about something more cheerful? Gold.
Yeah, please. Anything. Anything. Yeah, yeah.
No, I just noticed that. Oh, I didn't notice. It wasn't me alone. The gold is sitting at a record price. It's $2,500 an ounce.
Dollars an ounce.
Amazing. It's just up 70% over the last couple of years. It's just incredible. And I just wondered, do you have a reason why that is? Why would gold be up so high?
Well, first of all, you have to start decomposing the elements that affect the gold price. One is its use, okay? Its use in industry.
Well, it's basically useless, isn't it? I mean, you take it out of the ground, you put it back in the ground. I mean, how useful is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm saying, so it's not being driven by that, basic fundamental, the quality of gold. It's inert, as I recall, and it's got no running yield. So what is it then? It's a store of wealth. It's a non-fungible store of transportable wealth. And so people are reverting to it, in my view, in times of uncertainty, as a steady store of wealth. I've never been fascinated by gold other than if I would bought gold. I used to buy Kruger Rands and other gold coins and things because they're nice things to collect. But as a store of wealth, it doesn't yield a return. It's, to me, a backstop. Not an investment.
Well, it's been a pretty impressive backstop as backstops go.
As far as backstops go. But if you're into an asset class which is sentiment driven, in other words, it's got no underlying fundamental growth strategy or supply demand dynamic that you can think about, then you're talking about sentiment. And sentiment, as we all know, is an overnight change and it'll lose that 70. So I'm not a gold bull. I'm not a gold investor, but I can understand why it's an easy thing to store and understand and have some of. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is being boosted by the likelihood of interest rates coming down around the world. And
you introduce another dynamic. So it's relatively immune from political interference, as I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's also something in its favor in these turmoil times. But talking about stores, do you know what the term legal fakery means? It's a new term in our world. Okay. Legal fakery, for goodness.
Right.
Okay. So now, Motsoaledi, who's the new health minister, has discovered, and what I am a little bit surprised about in the GNU, is there a lot of discoveries being made about things that have been happening for 10 years. Okay.
Yeah.
So a new guy walks into the office and something that has obviously been around for 10 years becomes discovered. Anyway, he has discovered, it seems to me, tens of billions of fictitious medical-based lawsuit claims where, a guy, I guess, claimed that the operation made him lose his foot. Meanwhile, he went in there to have it cut off, or I don't know. And I don't get that because I would have thought, if anything, you can test the outcome of a medical investigation. Did you cut the foot off? Well, is it off for starters? Let's start there, okay? And you don't willy-nilly do it. Or I suppose accidents happen and all of these kinds of things. But my real point is that we are uncovering, it seems to me, plenty of information which was swept under the carpet in various places over the last decade. That's my sense. I mean, someone said to me yesterday, what do you think of what's happening? What's happening? And I said, well, I'm seeing a lot of green shoots growing out of the sludge.
Okay. Right.
And I think we're uncovering a lot of stuff. And I'm feeling quite good about all of that. And I don't know why people have suddenly decided they're going to find the truth.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that in the agriculture ministry, the agriculture minister discovered that 500 million rand gone missing. But, about the, I thought that was his response to the huge number of medical malpractice suits was very odd because what he did was he's given the people who've brought fake legal claims an opportunity to withdraw them. My feeling is, well, that's one way of dealing with it. The other way of dealing with it would be to, put them in jail.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Because that's like illegal. It's illegal to do that.
You can't hand back something you stole and be exonerated from being a thief.
And then create credit for it.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't.
It's a very South African solution.
Yeah, so listen, just put it, I will look away, you put it back on the table, and, if, table and then you can go. What a load of bullshit, man. That's just so bad. That is so bad, because terrible. It basically means that crime is an option, okay?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's an option because if you get caught, you can go, oops, this? You mean this box that I stole? No, you can have it back.
Oh, sorry. So, oh, no, I didn't mean that.
So there's an upside only for thieves. That is a serious impediment to progress, in my view.
All right. Maybe we should leave it there.
Did you have any numbers?
Oh, yeah. No, I do have a number.
And okay, give me a number, Tim, because people wait here with bated breath for our number. I've got no doubt.
All right. Okay. So somebody's done a net present value or return on investment rankings for American university degrees. Okay.
Ah,
so now
it is an interesting topic.
So here's the guess, right? At which university and studying what course gives you the highest average return on investment, would you guess? And what's the lowest? I mean, they're kind of obvious.
But, yeah, I would say Harvard MBA, highest.
Right.
And town planning in the Midwest, the lowest. I don't know.
All right. It is kind of instinctive. So Harvard Engineering has a return on investment of, they're saying here, you'll earn about $4 million a year. So enormous, fantastic ROI. And the lowest is visual and performing arts. Somewhat depressingly, the second lowest is theology. Somewhat obviously, the second highest is computer and computer techie.
Well, you know, first of all, those things don't surprise me. I mean, in theology, for example, your currency isn't money. I mean, your currency is faith, isn't it? And all that stuff. But it doesn't surprise me. And of course, it's not constant. You know, I mean, technology wouldn't have been right up there, you know, N years ago, and it's going to change. And So the question is, the root question is, are you studying what you want to do, or are you studying to earn a living? Is a degree, I suppose it's a bit of both. If you want to leapfrog from where you are to where you want to be, you need to get on a bridge. And that bridge is a qualification oftentimes. In fact, it's become, in my view, a bit of a currency. Degree. You know, there are some places where the degree is not really important in terms of its context and skill set. It's just that you have to have one. I mean, and I'm thinking politics again here.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that the vast majority of professions, the ROI is positive. Even, and this you'll be very happy to hear, communication and journalism has a positive ROI.
You see, however, I told you, man.
Sadly, education has a negative borrower. Anyway.
That's wrong. So that is wrong. You see, that's where I think intervention would be warranted, where we decree in a developing country such as ours that the return on investment in essential drivers of change should be made to be attractive, should be almost imposed on us, you know, I mean, for teachers and nurses and, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah.
Anyway, spring is around the corner, Tim. It's next time we speak, spring will have sprung.
So, as it has, apparently already on the Crocodile River.
it has. Okay, man.
Look after yourself.
Ciao.